The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. Good Monday. We have Raja Bell today on the show. I love Raja Bell. Raja Bell, when I talk about bad dudes in a Phoenix Suns uniform, Raja Bell would be at the top or near the top of the list. Can't think of too many badder dudes during the day. When it was Raja against the late Kobe Bryant, that was just theater and drama. And so after what happened last night with Jokic against Ishbia, Raja is retired. He is in South Florida. He does work with The Ringer. We're going to chop it up with Raja Bell on what he thinks should happen. Matt Ishbia weighed in a little bit earlier, if you're just joining us now, as we do this at 10 a.m., just after 10 a.m. We'll get into the comments from the owner on how he does not want to see Jokic suspended, and I am with the owner on this one. And then John Wilner will be with us. Bronny James going to the Pac-12. For the last year of the Pac-12 in existence, Bronny James committed to USC over the weekend. What is the impact on that? Plus, for those of you on the business of sports side of things, John has been doing some really good reporting on the Pac-12 and their television contract. And of all things, the president at Washington State gave some insight this last week. John wrote about it. A lot of people have checked it out. John's content we carry on sports360az.com. So, Raja Bell and John Wilner, a winning combination. Like that very much. We, of course, as always, want to thank Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, they take care of you. They take care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. Had a great weekend. A great weekend. A somewhat decompressing weekend other than the playoffs and actually listening to the Diamondbacks on radio throughout the weekend. I took in a bunch of their games too. But we'll start with the Suns. I did not go last night. I wanted Eric Sorensen to go, and he did. I'm not one of those that has to be at every single game in doing this. Strength in numbers. I trust the team. They do great work, all of them in their own way, their own shape, their own form. They all get after it, and it's great to have teammates like that. Eliav Gabay, Eric Sorensen, they jumped in on it. Jordan Spurgeon, and Jordan Hamm will be at Game 6. Jordan Spurgeon will be in Denver tomorrow, and I will go to Denver if there's a Game 7. That's how it works. Strength in numbers. This is not all about one person and what we do. So I took it in and watched it last night, and first of all, the incident itself, let's just get into that. The technical foul should have been called. The idea of, I'm sure many of you don't want to see the best player on the other team. And that is a problem in sports in general in this day and age. If we can just figure out how to get the best player off the court, then we will win. This goes back, I said it last night out loud, Suns Spurs. I'm going to talk to Raja about it here in a couple of minutes. Those of us that have been around longer than a nanosecond can recall Suns Spurs. And now that was a heartbreaking time if you were a fan of the Suns. The game last night was just tremendous basketball. Forget about the win and the loss for a minute. If you weren't entertained by that, then you're really not into sports. If you weren't entertained with the energy, the enthusiasm, the shot making, the skill of the game on both sides, that's how I am. I don't sit here and root. I'm wearing orange today, but I don't root. I want to see great, great theater, great, great drama. And this series has delivered. Like I watched Warriors-Lakers the other night, and LeBron decides to go crazy towards the end of the third quarter, and then he's just completely out of gas. Like he's almost had to be given oxygen. I'm sure you remember it. He's doing reverse spins and just coast to coast and blocking shots and completely dominating. I'm like, this is so great. This is end-to-end unscripted blank canvas. This is how we do it. And when it comes to Suns and Denver, like Jokic stands out beyond the three-point arc with a hand in his face and hits a shot. Jokic goes inside, and doesn't matter if it's Lonsdale or Ayton. Ayton wasn't good, and Ayton deserved every bit of the criticism that was sent his way on game number 3. Every last bit of it. He was bad. Then you turn around, and you just see the ebbs and flows of a series. We've talked here for the last couple of weeks, like, where is Terrence Ross? Where's Terrence Ross? Anybody. And you that are the Shamit haters. Not that I haven't sat here and questioned Shamit, but many have said, and you know you are, you're not in your head, it's fine. Oh, he's terrible, he's horrible, get him out of here. Without Shamit, they're down in this series. Instead, what was supposed to happen, happened. Home court was held. Suns got to find a way to win one game in Denver. Got to find a way to win one game in Denver. And so as the game progresses and the energy is high, Grant Hill's hyperventilating about how well the game is being played, and we have a situation where the ball goes into the stands. And we have a former player at Michigan State who happens to be the owner of the Suns team. And he happens to get the elbow, and a guy behind him gets thrown out because the guy put his hand on Jokic. Now, a fan of the Suns would say, we don't want the best player on the court. I really like what Matt Ishbia said today. So far, it's hard to not like Matt Ishbia. It really is. Because rather than walking around and strutting around and saying that this isn't good and this is unfair and woe is us, Phoenix has always had a lot of woe is us. Woe is us. Everybody has it in for us. I hear this nonsense about how we're not a great sports market. And that's complete BS. We're a great sports market. We have a lot going on here. But I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they got to throw them out of the game. It says here in rule book XYZ, no, you're being a fan. You're not sitting here being sensical. This is excitement, both ends of the court. It is. And you may disagree with me. It's fine. Matt Ishbia on Twitter this morning. Great win for the Suns last night. An amazing series so far! Exclamation point. That should be and is the only story, he tweeted. Continuing from Matt Ishbia, owner of the Suns, suspending or fining anyone over last night's incident would not be right. I have a lot of respect for Jokic and don't want to see anything like that. Excited for games five, go Suns. The league hasn't announced any punishment yet for what has happened. Would we call it a fight? No. Would we call it a fracas? Probably. Is it worthy of having an MVP guy thrown out? Well, we don't want the best on the floor. We really just want to make sure that we get through this series. We want to just win. No. Give me the best. Beat the best. Beat the best. Don't need an exclamation mark. Be tougher than that. Be tougher than that. I'm going to have Roger Bell on in a couple of minutes, one of the toughest dudes I've ever come across. And get his view of what happened and if he thinks that there should be a suspension or not. You know, beyond that, I'll go back to Game 3 and DeAndre Ayton. I've already said I don't believe DeAndre Ayton is going to be here next year. It's around the league that he hasn't been happy here. He can deny it all he wants. Teammates can say what they want to say. Like I thought what Jock Landale went out of his way on Saturday and said it was complete BS, and the tearing down of Ayton bothers him, and that people don't see. He was protecting his teammate, and that's great, and that's cool. From a pure consistent standpoint, DeAndre Ayton has not delivered consistently. You can't throw him out and say, oh, we don't want him here. No, he's part of this team, and he's going to help in a big way. If he doesn't help in a big way, I don't believe Jock Landale on his own can handle it. By the way, this is an MVP guy they're going up against, so let's be really fair about this. This isn't some stiff. Easy thing is to always bury a player or a coach. Like in baseball, if a team's not good, the third base coach always gets blamed for sending the runner home. Doesn't know what he's doing. He's the worst. Get him out of here. There's going to be that pitcher that comes out every fifth day. In this case, it was Madison Bumgarner. Get after him. Right? If the Suns don't win, then they're not going after Monty yet. They're going after Ayton. And there's good reason to go after DeAndre Ayton. I'm not saying there shouldn't be frustration over it, but if you're like, well, they don't need him to win, I think you're kidding yourself. I really do. I don't know why his motor doesn't constantly go at a high level. Jock Landale went out of his way to say, that's crap. His motor is always going. That's a teammate protecting a teammate. Admirable trait, but facts are facts. His motor is not always going. So game three is frustrating. It's nice to see teammates rally around one another. But the Suns have found this way, and the easy way about it is Devin Booker is at another level. He's not an all-star, though, right? Like, when people get all outraged about the all-star game, does that stuff really mean something? You're invited to a mid-season deal. It's a popularity contest. People haven't seen Devin Booker's skill here in the last couple of years. That's a them problem. I can't help that. All I know is he's one of the best players in the league. His mid-range game is amazing. I'm going to talk to Raja about Devin Booker and what he sees. But here's the other part of it. It's pretty clear to me that while Durant and Booker can go put up point after point after point, there's going to come a game where one is not as on as the other. And yet I think when that happens, they can pick each other up. I can't imagine a night where both of them are 5 of 20 from the floor in the playoffs. Can't. And that may happen. There are nights during the course of this grind trying to get to 15 victories or 16 victories where a team just craps the bed and they get blown out. That happens. I've seen it happen in the playoffs through the years. And the Suns are in a space where there may come a night where one doesn't play well, but I believe the other can pick them up. That's the great thing about having a couple of stars. It's much like watching Golden State. And so when I see a player like Devin go about his business, it's the efficiency that is just mind-blowing. 14 of 17 last night. The efficiency of it. 70% in a series. And the Suns shooting 56% from the floor. You're going to win almost every single time if you shoot that well, unless you don't play a lick of defense. More importantly, Monty Williams has been in the crosshairs. Monty Williams has been, you know, the subject of fan anger, frustration, even people around the building that I've known a long time walk down there. What's going on with Monty? He doesn't know what he's doing with his bench. Well, there's some truth in that. He's tried to go about his business and find the right combination. He finally did, at least the last couple of games. I've been sitting here wondering about, is it just no gas left in the tank for TJ Warren or Terrence Ross? We're not going to see them at all. And now he's expanded his bench to where Shamet gives them more than just something. And Lonsdale's giving them more than just something. James Jones deserves a ton of credit for this. Ton of credit. And it'll be back in this series. It's where it's supposed to be. Game number 5 is Tuesday night. The big story, though, is what will the NBA do? Will they suspend Jokic? The owner of the Suns says, don't do it. I'm of the opinion that the owner is correct. I don't want to see an asterisk. I know we live in a society nowadays. Get the best player out of there. She's thrown too many pitches. He's dirty, plays hard. Whatever the excuses are, just give me the best. Let the best beat the best. We'll talk with Raja Bell about that and more next. All right, as promised, I've been pumped up, psyched up, geeked up to get to Raja Bell because through the years of being here in the Valley, and it's north of 30 now, there's not been many, if any, that were tougher than this dude. And I'm not saying that to suck up to you right off the top. I just loved watching you play. And I wanted to get caught up with you on all things. I know you're with the Ringer. I see on your social that you're chasing around kids. You're a football dad, it looks like, on one hand, right? So how are things, Raja?
Things are well. Cindy and I moved back down to South Florida. We got 4 kids. My oldest, Tia, is a young freshman quarterback. My middle boy is more of a basketball, and then our 2 younger ones play everything. So we're chasing, but enjoying it. Watching the playoffs, obviously, wish we could be there in Phoenix more often to support, but life is coming at us pretty quick. So we stay busy, but we're enjoying it, having a good time. Certainly miss being out there in Phoenix and the great fans and the organization and excited in the direction that it's headed.
Okay, youth sports. I just want to get into this with you for a second. You're in that youth sports space. You're playing. You don't really see youth sports. Now you're in the middle of it all. What do you make out of being a dad of kids in sports in this day and age? The good, the bad, the ugly, whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was kind of blessed that my kids were just getting to an age to start competing when my career was winding down, so I could be at a lot of it. And, especially here in South Florida where football is king, like there was a heavy soccer influence. Sports like basketball were kind of neglected at the grassroots level. So, you know, when I got home and I started seeing that there was a real void, you know, of true fundamentals and people that really knew what they were doing with the young kids, that stuck out to me. So I tried to get involved as much as I could to try to, you know, teach kids the right way to play and help them on their journey. As a dad, I mean, it's been trial and error. Like, you know, I sat back, I watched, I've coached, I've been too hard on some, I've been not hard enough on others, you know, and I'm evolving as a parent, but most of all, my wife and I really just enjoy that all four of our kids, when they get on a field or a court, they know how to play hard. They know how to be intense. At the same time, they're great sports and they're leaders. They know how to win. They know how to lose. And just watching their kind of development as overall little human beings, you know, when they step on fields, you know, it's a real representation of our house and what we try to put stock in. And we're really, really proud of them.
You're entering that space, Raja, of being a quarterback dad in high school, which could mean all sorts of things. It could mean you got to go to this combine. The Elite 11 is over here. This QB hit list wants you. This group wants. How do you take all the noise as a dad and just say, son, stay focused?
Just like that. I mean, I've tried to prep him once we realized that you know, that's what he was tracking towards and he wanted to do. You know, we started having some deeper conversations philosophically about how you separate the noise from, you know, ultimately what it is you're trying to do and why you do it, which is for the love of it. And you know, trying to keep that pure and trying to keep him centered. I've been blessed and he's been blessed to have some really good coaches and mentors in that space where, you know, if he can control what he can control, which is him and being the best version of himself, and really just focusing on his growth, you know, physically at this really, you know, interesting time. He's grown like 4 inches in the last 2 years. And, wow. And you know, emotionally and mentally, you know, the rest of it just becomes white noise for him. And you just go out there and try to produce. And so, you know, again, as my career unwinded, I learned that I needed to listen to less and less of what was going on outside the building. And that was going to be helpful because if you're bending an ear to everything that's going on, I mean, you're pulled in so many distracting ways that it's hard to focus. And so, you know, he's been raised really and understands that to kind of operate in that space.
That's good stuff. And it's only going to get better. They say it as I'm now in my 50s, life only gets better, dude. So, you know, it's just going to keep coming at
you. No doubt.
Raja Bell with us for a couple of minutes. You can find his content on The Ringer. You can follow him on social as well. He's on Twitter. He's very active there. He joins us for a couple of minutes. All right, news of the day. Matt Ishbia, the new owner of the Suns, and Jokic get into it last night with an elbow. Fans in Phoenix want him suspended, the big man suspended. This takes me back to Suns Spurs back in the day. I mean, there's just all sorts of stuff. What did you make out of what happened between the big man and the owner of the Suns last night?
Yeah, that was interesting. And I guess, you know, as a Phoenix fan, we do deserve some of that good luck. There was so much bad luck associated with suspensions when I was around. But so first, let me just say, like, Matt Ishbia and company reached out and invited us all out for game three on Friday. Unfortunately, I couldn't come out. So that's the only capacity I know him in. But he seems like a really great dude and really committed to building. Having said all of that, I don't think that the Joker should be suspended for that. I think it would, and this is going to sound crazy because we were robbed, in my opinion, of a really good playoff game six and seven environment back when we played the Spurs. But I just don't think it's really fair. That's one of those things. You're on the sideline. You don't really probably know who Matt is. He's holding the ball. And it's a mix up. The tech I didn't have a problem with, but I don't think they should suspend him because it's such great basketball and kind of being removed from it and just being a fan and watching this toe to toe kind of heavyweight match has been very, very fun. And I'd like to see it continue. I'd like the Suns to win, obviously. Yeah. But I want to see the good basketball that they've been putting on display for the last four games.
I mean, in the moment, it just felt like it was so instantaneous that you can't sit there. I'm on your side of the street. You can't say, no, you're out. One, two, at this point of the series, from a fan's point of view, they don't want to, I'm sure it's Brad, you're crazy. We want him out. I feel like I want to see great basketball and I want to see the greatness all played out on an even field, which would be game five on Tuesday night.
Yeah, no, totally. And I look, if I put my true son Homer hat on and I was was in that locker room, that, like, I'd probably tell you something different. But, you know, as a fan sitting back and watching it and being in situations like that where, you know, I don't know who you are. You've got the ball. I'm trying to grab it. You know, like I'm chicken wing. Look, I was pretty hot. And I could run really hot. And so I could see myself in a situation like that. And I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be hypocritical. So I'd have to sit here and tell you, I probably don't think he needs to be suspended for that.
Yeah. What do you make out of Durant and Booker together? It's only been a couple of months, Raja.
Yeah. Well, first of all, D-Book is having a historic playoff run. He's playing as well as anyone I can remember. You know, and I've been watching and playing the game for a long time, but what he's doing offensively with just the different levels that he's scoring at, you know, he's all over. He's to the rim. He's in his mid range. He's, you know, he's shooting well from beyond the arc, and just the efficiency with which he's doing it has been pretty remarkable. And I think KD came in, and I don't mean to speak for him. I'm just kind of observing. Yeah. And I think his goal was to fit in with that. And, you know, as brilliant as he can be offensively with the ball in his hands and high usage, if he needs to be, he's equally as good as being off the ball and being complimentary and, you know, picking his spots. And I think, you know, they've got a really nice flow between the two of them right now. And I think if there were a game where, for whatever reason, D-Book wasn't as efficient or wasn't as prolific scoring the ball, I think it would be a pretty seamless kind of transition for KD to just kind of take more of it on his shoulders and go. So I think it's been a really fascinating kind of duo to watch. I think they're just getting warmed up. Like, it's just, you know, it's just really starting to materialize. The pace has been really, really critical in the last two games to kind of unlock some of their ability to just get out and share the ball and get up more shots and volume. And so it's been cool. I think they're as dangerous as anyone when they're playing the way they want to play.
There's a lot on Booker's plate out here. Fans are starting to talk about him as one of the greatest in the history of the game. Yet he hasn't been to an All-Star game yet, but that's a whole other thing. So when you see him, this is one of those, there's no wrong answer, but when you see him, does he remind you of anybody that you've seen through the years?
I mean, I think he's got pieces of a lot of different players. I mean, I was just in the other room hanging out, having coffee, and I was hearing them compare him to Kobe. He's got Kobe vibes in his game. He's got Kevin Durant vibes in his game. He's got, you know, I see some Steve Nash. He's got a lot of different people. He is this kind of that generation of player was privy to seeing some great offensive weaponry in the generation before them. And I think he is a really good combination of a lot of people. I was sitting around last night with my middle boy, Ty, who's more of a basketball kid. And we were talking about his game, and I was obviously, you know, talking about his offense and challenging Ty to kind of watch him and pick some things from his game to incorporate into Ty's game. But I then found myself trying to figure out how I would guard him. And, you know, that'd be a very, very difficult thing to do. And I didn't know where to start. And I think that's, for me, that's the highest compliment I can play to offensive players. If I can't figure out how I would attack you or what I would do to kind of corral you, that's my way of paying you the highest praise. And so it's very fun to watch, well-rounded and super gifted offensively.
Did you ever figure out how to guard Kobe?
No, never figured it out. I mean, I had my game plan, which was to you know, get him certain spots in that triangle, obviously, were where they wanted to play out of it in ideal situations. And so if I could get him off of a couple of those spots, I felt like, you know, won me a few percentage points. If I could keep him off the free throw line, there's a few more percentage points. You know, if I could affect, you know, his field goal percentage without fouling, that, you know, that was big. And then I always felt that when he gave it up, given the opportunity and being in the right position, if I could keep it out of his hands for an extra beat or two, somebody else on the team would start to try to do their thing. And there were, you know, sometimes where that wasn't always what Kobe wanted. And so if I could get him caught up and maybe not touching it as much as he wanted, maybe I could get in his head. But, you know, with guys like that, you just kind of hang on and pray that that the rest of your team can outscore him.
Looking back on it, Raja, was he your toughest guard? Were there other guys you looked at and you're like, no, Brad, there was this, or hands it away, Brad, it's Kobe.
No, I would look. There were some. I played with, against some really great offensive players. I mean, D Wade was special. Ginobili was tough to guard. You know, Carmelo. I'd guard LeBron sometimes, and even guys that you wouldn't think of. You know, Kevin Martin, that used to be out in Sacramento, was a really kind of awkward player that had these runners and stuff. He was hard to guard. Rip and Ray Allen and Reggie Miller coming off of all of those screens, all super challenging in their own right. Nothing like Kobe. Kobe was just, I mean, there was this will that a lot of great players have, but there was this ability to really break down what you wanted to do to him and have a counter. You know, I remember we were playing in LA and he went to that, you know, right shoulder kind of fade. He gave me a little shimmy and he went to fade. And I had quick hands at times, so I got a little strip on him, and he said it out loud to me. He said, "Man, I forgot, you know, that you like to reach in there and strip when I'm on my fade." And he didn't say anything else, but he didn't do it again the rest of the game. So he gave me no more opportunity to get it. And he was just, you know, a cut above on top of all the physical stuff. Mentally, he was just razor sharp.
Yeah. No, I mean, Suns, Lakers, Kobe would walk in the gym, Raja in him, there wasn't better drama. It really wasn't better theater. There wasn't better drama than that matchup. And, you know, obviously he's no longer here. And I think of you often. I thought of you when he passed away. It's like that's what Phoenix Suns basketball was in your era, was Kobe against Raja.
Yeah, those were great times in my life, my family's life. It was a great time to be a son. People ask me all the time about Phoenix fans, and I tell them it was – you know, the best experience for me. I only knew the Valley one way. Suns were on fire. We were good. It was electric. It was an energy when you walked around the town. You know, and so I certainly miss those. They're one regret that, you know, I have. They're not many over the course of my career, like, because it played out the way it was supposed to. But I would have liked to have, you know, stayed longer. It wasn't ultimately in my control. But, you know, that's a place that I like to be associated with, that I kind of consider home, even though I only played there for a short 3.5 years. But that was the best time in my NBA career.
You know, Al McCoy's retiring, and yeah. Al's been doing the radio games for 51 years. He's 90.
He's the best. Al's 90?
90. He turned 90 last month, Raja. And do you have any Al thoughts? I'm collecting some from players, just time that you were around someone. He wasn't on the team in terms of on the court, but he was on the team on the charters or on the descriptions of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't have any great stories. I wish I did, but I just remember Al was always kind of right there. Off in the cut, I would describe it as, right? Like, just kind of there, and had this ability, even though, I mean, if he's 90 now, what's that? I mean, it probably puts him around 70, but certainly not in our demo, right? But weirdly in touch with our demo and what was going on with us, you know, and always able to kind of chime in with a little anecdote or story that was, you know, that was kind of like right on point. And, you know, my granddad couldn't do that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and Al just had this ability. He'd been around, he had seen so much. He had been in so many locker rooms and on so many planes, and always there with a great bit of wisdom or a great bit of advice, and certainly right on point. You know, for a guy that you wouldn't expect to always be right on point.
Yeah. The Ringer, tell me what you're doing there for fans that may not be aware.
Yeah. So, a couple years ago, Logan Murdoch and I, he's a great writer out of the, Bay Area. He wrote, covered the Golden State Warriors on the beat for a while. We teamed up and we do a podcast. It's Mondays and Thursdays. We're called The Real Ones on the Ringer NBA feed. We aren't your typical like X and O breakdown pod, although we will do that if we need to. We're more kind of vibes and, you know, shooting the breeze, talking a little stuff, telling stories. We've had great guests. I mean, we had Boris on, we've had Sean Marion on, we've had, you know, Steve Kerr, a little bit of everybody. And so you can catch us Mondays and Thursdays on the Ringer NBA feed, Real Ones, we're calling it.
That's good stuff. You see yourself in the NBA when you're done with the kids, getting back into it, ownership, management, scout, whatever. You see that space eventually.
Yeah, you know, I took a year. It's 2 years out of retirement, and I joined David Griffin and company when LeBron and Kevin Love came to the Cavs. So I worked in the front office for a year with them. It was a phenomenal experience. I learned a ton, but my family was too young at the time for me to be away as much as I was. And so to answer your question, sure. I would love to be back in the mix. And there's always a piece of me when I watch that's a little unfulfilled because I feel like I have something to give to it, but it's just so much more important for me and my family for me to be around right now that's just going to have to wait. But when the time comes and all these little people are grown and they don't want to be around us anymore, I could totally see myself back in it.
That's great. That's great. It's great to catch up with you. I appreciate the time. Stay well. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Raja Bell with us. And we're back with, you can find him on The Ringer. We're back with more after this timeout. Time now to catch up, chop it up with the great John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. You can find his content, follow him on social over on Twitter, Wilner Hotline. Of course, we carry his content at sports360az.com and on television as well. It is good to see you. It's an interesting time because, you know, first part of May, spring ball's over, really not much going on. John, there's a ton going on, starting with Bronny James deciding on a Pac-12 school that's not going to be a Pac-12 school much longer, but Bronny James, I think, is the seismic story to start with.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. College sports are trying to be like the NFL, where you make news 12 months a year, right? And doing a pretty darn good job of mimicking the NFL. You know, Bronny James is interesting for two reasons, I think. One is USC's the favorite. They're the favorite in the Pac-12 next season. You know, they got Boogie Ellis returning. You're adding Bronny James, five-star. They got the number one guard in the country coming in. USC, I think you got to pick them over Arizona and UCLA at this point. The other piece is just the chaos that's going to come with having LeBron James's son and the film crews and the media. And USC is going to have to deal with all that. It'll be interesting to see how they do it. You know, you could argue that they're better equipped or worse equipped because they're in LA, right? Would Oregon, say, have been better equipped, a small town, to deal with the chaos? Maybe. But it's going to be real interesting to see how Coach Andy Enfield kind of handles everything that comes with having LeBron James's son.
Yeah, because, John, you know, I look at SC and they're not a basketball school by any stretch of the imagination. And I get it. He's still in LA. I get it. There's all the NIL stuff that he doesn't even really need from a family standpoint. Andy Enfield's going to have him for a year. They're going to leave after that. Does this change USC? We haven't seen their schedule yet. I have to believe that the USC basketball schedule in the last 24 hours has had kind of a major flip. Like, we're going to see some made-for-TV games, right?
We might, yeah. You know, I think they're scheduled to play Auburn already just because they had them last year. You know, there's not a whole lot of flexibility because they would have already had to commit to one of those tournaments. But we'll see. I mean, in terms of Pac-12, absolutely. In some ways, it's a smaller version of Dion at Colorado, right? They're much more of an interesting media product. Right. So I think the conference schedule may reflect a higher demand for USC games, partly because of Bronny James, but also just because USC is going to be really good.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. You had an interesting column, and we have a new name to put into the why has the Pac-12 not gotten a deal done yet from a media standpoint? Because John and I have been doing this column for about as long as we've known each other, this topic, I should say. And the new name to add to the equation is the president of Washington State University, of all places. So the audience is like, what? Who? How does this guy have any insight? Take it away, John.
Well, as you know, first of all, the 10 remaining presidents are being briefed regularly by Commissioner George Kliakoff on the state of the media rights expansion, all that. Second, he probably knows college sports better than anybody else. He was a president of Kansas State. He's the Pac-12's representative on the College Football Playoff Board. And he is also, crucially, on the Pac-12's executive committee, which is the three presidents that drive the agenda for the remaining seven or remaining nine, depending on how you want to look at it. He is plugged in with what's going on. He did a conversation with a Washington State trustee last week that was recorded, and it covered sports.
Let me jump in for a
minute. Oh, sure.
His name is Kirk Schultz. For the fans that don't know,
yes,
that's the new name that John has unearthed
through this little YouTube interview, but Kirk Schultz is the name to remember now in all this. So take it from there.
Okay, so Schultz had a conversation that was recorded about college sports, and it was an hour long, and it talked about a whole lot of stuff, NIL, dealing with faculty, the impact of athletics on your university. But a good portion of it was devoted to the Pac-12's media rights situation and the future of the conference. And he said that they have one of their partners has said, we're willing to sign on the dotted line right now and do a deal with you, except we can't announce a huge media deal at the same time we're going through layoffs, just because the optics would look so bad within the company. Mm. And that is, Schultz said, one of the reasons for the delay in getting a deal done. If you look back to what other presidents said in March, including Arizona State's Michael Crow and Arizona's Robert Robbins, about expecting that they would have the thing would be wrapped up in March or April. Well, if the media companies then say to the Pac-12, you know what, we got to push it back because we're going to have layoffs, you know, you could find a way to make that square peg fit into that round hole a little bit in terms of explaining the delay. But I have to believe that the economic environment, you know, Amazon and ESPN, especially with their layoffs, is affecting the timing of this whole thing.
Okay, so we look at this now, and we're coming up to the middle part of May. We're about 9 weeks away from Pac-12 Football Media Day in Las Vegas. It seems to me now that you look and say that would be the ideal place to announce this. You don't want to do it over 4th of July week. You want to make a splash, right? If you're the Pac-12, you can't just send out a release on like June 10th and say, hey, here we go when nobody's around, right? It should be Vegas now, shouldn't it, John?
Could be. Now, one thing to remember is June 30th, the end of the fiscal year, there is a possibility, and I don't have the contracts, but my strong suspicion is that for schools that the Pac-12 might want to add, there may be an escalation in exit fees. Like, let's just take San Diego State, for example.
Sure.
Possible, the Aztecs would have to pay more to exit the Mountain West after June 30th, because then they would be in the final fiscal year of their contract with the Mountain West. So most of these deals have escalating penalties for departures. And my guess is a San Diego State or an SMU may have to pay more if the expansion decision is after the turn of the fiscal year. So June 30th could be a little bit of a soft deadline for the conference if they want to expand and do it in a way that limits the penalty a new member might have to pay.
Yeah, if they don't expand, John, to your point, if San Diego State's like, well, we're bound to be here, now that conference is really over a barrel because USC and UCLA are gone and they don't have the replacements in place yet, right? I mean, am I looking at this and saying, now that you put it that way, you tilt your head and say, well, they better darn well get this deal done before June 30th.
You would think. Now, I don't know what the escalation and penalty would be for San Diego State to leave the Mountain West or SMU to leave the American, but, you know, they would probably still pay the penalty, I would think, to get into the Pac-12. The schools want to do it so badly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would would take them off the table or not, or if it would just be a deal where the university president had to ante up more money. But my guess is the Pac-12 wants to get this thing done by June 30th. Whether they do or not, I don't know. They don't technically have to. This is an important point, though. From the standpoint of, like, you know, production and shifting your media partners, I mean, this thing could go on until the winter. You know, Amazon or Apple don't need a year's notice to get ready to broadcast Pac-12 football in the fall of 2024. The Big Ten's deal, you know, they went into August to sign a deal that started the following July. Pac-12 could go into the fall or winter technically, but I don't think they want to do that for a variety of reasons.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Follow him on Wilner Hotline. His content is on sports360az.com. We appreciate John each and every week jumping on to chop it up. A couple other things I'll get you out of here. Alabama baseball and betting, sports betting. We'd both be naive to think that there hasn't been some, I don't know, kids looking at, hey, let's put a bet here, a bet there. But when it's the coach who's removed at Alabama, and you look at Greg Byrne, who I like a great deal, the AD at Alabama, who was at the University of Arizona, and they had the issue in basketball with a player. Now they have this. Now, there's a lot around what's going on in Alabama. Let's just take the gambling side of it, John.
Yeah, they've had it's been a difficult six months or so for them, no question. You know, the gambling piece, most important thing for folks to know is there's no evidence that any of the Alabama baseball players knew what the coach was doing or were involved in any way. But basically, he got caught talking to a former high school baseball coach, apparently about the decision to scratch their starting pitcher before a game, and that former coach was in line to place a wager at the time. And I have to think with the expansion of gambling nationwide, yep, you know, there's going to be more of this stuff in coming years. Now, the best policing of gambling occurs in Vegas, right? The casinos, they are do the best job, better than, you know, the NCAA could do or law enforcement. The casinos know when there's funny stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how they handle oversight of college sports, because, you know, with all the schools and football and men's basketball and baseball and all the places where you can gamble now across the country, you have to think this is going to happen more and more.
John, it's impossible now, it feels to me, for these universities to watch over student athletes. You know, you had a death of a soccer player at Stanford for mental health, right? You had gambling now, you have gun violence. I've had a couple coaches that have brought that up to me, that, you know, you got guys that and girls that don't understand really what they're getting themselves into. Universities and sports, we like to watch the games, but man, for those other 6 days and 20 hours out of the week, I don't know how the NCAA or how colleges can keep everything together. I don't think I'm going too far off the deep end on this one.
No, absolutely not. It's more and more of a problem. And the schools, the big thing is the schools don't have the resources to do it, right? I mean, all those things, you can't, there's hundreds of student athletes. I mean, the Pac-12 alone has thousands of student athletes, right? Across the country, Division I, you're talking about tens and hundreds of thousands. And there's a lot of places they can go to get in trouble and a lot of hours in the day available for them to find that trouble, right? And now you add the gambling piece now, and it's going to be even more difficult for the schools, but it's a resource problem. And, you know, the schools often end up getting blamed. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Well, either they simply can't do it, they don't have the money to do it, or also they don't have the right to do it, because these athletes are adults and you can't tell them what to do when they're over 18.
Yeah, I was the color analyst on Arizona State basketball during the Point Shane scandal with Headache Smith. No idea. Just thought, man, this is a really bad team. And so I go back all those years ago to that, and I sat there every night, bumped around on planes with all of them, and had no idea that that was going on. And that was years and years ago. So no, I just think it's important to put this point on it, because the gambling piece is now just the latest that is coming to the surface. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always, John. See you next week.
Thanks so much, Brad.
There's John Wilner with us. Wilner Hotline. Give him a follow on his social channels. The Wilner Canzano Podcast, in my order. You can follow that online as well. We're back with more after this timeout.